Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed the light on the darkened corridors of power, and we shine a light ahead of us on the path to where evolution is leading. The purpose of our Wiki Politiki radio podcast is to bring left and right front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems rather than defend positions. We have another purpose as well, and that is to provide context at a time when the content can be contradictory, confusing, and overwhelming. Our show today may be the most important show we've done yet, because it reveals and explores something that has largely been invisible to most of us. I know, okay, invisible on the radio, that doesn't mean much. But seriously, the invisible I'm talking about is something that is like air to birds and water to fish, something that we are so inside of that we can't see it, an invisible structure of belief so intrinsic to our so-called civilization that we mistake it for universal reality. Our guests today are Native American scholar, legal scholar, and activist Steve Newcomb and his daughter, Shauna Bluestar. And they'll be speaking about the doctrine of discovery and domination based on a papal bull issued over 500 years ago that gave the Christian nations, you can hear the quote marks around that, can't you, the right to dominate, exploit, enslave, rob, and murder the native peoples it encountered. So when we say Columbus discovered America, well, we might as well say Willie Sutton discovered banks. Now, Willie, for those of you who don't know, was the most famous bank robber of the 20th century. So yeah, he discovered banks. Our first guest today, Steve Newcomb, is one of the world's leading scholars on the doctrine of discovery and domination. We'll hear more about that. He's also the author of the best-selling book, Pagans in the Promised Land, Decoding the Doctrine of Christian Discovery. He's a co-producer of the documentary movie, The Doctrine of Discovery, Unmasking the Domination Code, directed and produced by Sheldon Wolfchild with narration by Buffy St. Marie. In 1992, Steve Newcomb, along with Virgil Killstraight, founded the Indigenous Law Institute and began a global campaign to call upon the Holy See in the Vatican to revoke the papal bull of discovery and domination issued May 4th, 1493. That campaign has since developed into a worldwide movement. Shauna Bluestar, who will be our guest in the second segment and third segment, is an international speaker and visionary women's leadership and business consultant, and she's focused on holistic well-being and spirituality. She is joined with her father to lead a global movement for conscious change. Together, they speak about the negative effects of the doctrine of discovery, unmasking the domination code, and how to find balance with healing through the reverence code, which is based on ancient and indigenous wisdom. Shauna has dedicated her life and work to bring healing for humanity, the planet, and the future generations. So in this conversation today, we're going to hear about the awful truth, and we're going to hear about the awesome opportunities. So we're going to begin with Stephen. Here we are. I mean, we're talking about. Oh, he did. Okay. Well, hopefully he'll drop on again. Yeah, we have this technical thing. Let me do a little bit more of an introduction here. We'll spend the first segment with Stephen, and we're going to unwrap the very innocuous sounding doctrine of discovery. And we'll talk later in the second segment with Shauna about her work and creating a future where we live in harmony with the web of life instead of harm. She calls it the Reverence Code. And the third segment will be where we go from here as to how we bring forth this information and help everyone see how the dominator extractor mindset has ensnared and enslaved us all and has taken us to the brink of extinction. That's the bad news. The good news is we're ready to face the bad news. So Stephen and Shauna, welcome.
Good to be with you. Thank you so
Thanks.
Much.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll start with you. Let's jump in. Tell us about the doctrine of discovery and how you discovered it.
Well, the path that I took began when I read a book called Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee by Dee Brown as a teenager. And after that, I began to associate with traditional elders and spiritual people, medicine people. And I ended up reading a number of Vine DeLoria Jr.'s books, one of which was entitled God is Red. And in that book, it had a quotation from the Papal Bull of May 4th, 1493. And when I was later at the University of Oregon, I took a federal Indian law course at the law school as an undergraduate. I received permission to do that. And while we were taking that course, those of us that were native students from the student union, we were assigned the Supreme Court ruling Johnson versus McIntosh, and we had to read that and analyze it. And in that decision, I noticed that the Supreme Court had used the phrase Christian people and contrasted that with the natives who were heathens. And it took me back to that mention of the Vatican Papal Bull in Vine DeLoria's book. And eventually, I began to research that period of history. For about 10 years, I dedicated a tremendous amount of my spare time to that research and in my travels and so forth. So I eventually was able to locate the Vatican Papal documents of the 15th century and began to investigate the Latin and the English versions of those documents. And basically, the so-called doctrine of discovery, or what is sometimes referred to as the right of discovery, boils down to the right or the claim of a right of Christian domination over non-Christians and their lands. And that is the foundation of United States federal Indian law to this day. So it's quite an amazing body of information. But you have to dig deep and work really hard at going through it all.
The most shocking thing to me when I've heard you speak and watched your videos and so on is that this ancient or seemingly very archaic idea from 500 years ago is being used in American law by the Supreme Court to this day. How is that possible?
Well, because it's foundational to the conceptual system that was created by the intellectuals working on behalf of the United States, and because that doctrine is found in those documents that were used as source materials by those intellectuals, people like Chief Justice John Marshall and many, many others, Joseph Story and others on the Supreme Court and others in the U.S. government, they really have that woven into the foundation of the United States. But it's something that has remained somewhat out of focus, except for those people that work in the field of federal Indian law or U.S. law as a specialty. And I had a conversation with at one point with Justice Scalia, and I was asking him about it, and he seemed to be really oblivious. He seemed to, at least he claimed that he had no understanding of the Johnson versus McIntosh ruling of 1823 or the doctrine of discovery. And yet about a year and a half prior to that conversation in 2005, the Supreme Court had used the doctrine of discovery in footnote number one in a decision called City of Sherrill versus Oneida Indian Nation of New York. So anyway, it is surprising, certainly, that a doctrine which is based on a claim of a right of domination, which is worded as ultimate dominion in the Supreme Court ruling, is still used as foundational to U.S. law today, but it's part of what's called the organic law, meaning the origin of the entire U.S. legal and political system, and not just the United States, but Canada and Australia and New Zealand, many other countries in the world as well.
So basically, the church gave the right of the explorers, the conquistadors, when they arrived on a foreign shore where there were indigenous people or original people, people who had not yet been dominated from the outside, the doctrine essentially said that they and everything they owned was fair game for taking?
Well, the specific language, I always say that they purported to give the right. I mean, I don't believe that they actually had the right to give to begin with, but that's another part of the conversation. But if you just look at the documents themselves, you have to trace it all the way back to at least 1452, and a Vatican document called the Dum Diversus issued by Pope Nicholas V to King Alfonso of Portugal. And when you look at the very specific language in there that is the supposed authorization for the king to go to the western coast of Africa, the wording states that the king is authorized to, quote, invade, capture, vanquish, and subdue all Saracens, pagans, and other enemies of Christ, to reduce their persons to perpetual slavery, and to take away all their possessions and property. So that is very definitely a system of domination, and the result, of course, is dehumanization of the non-Christians who are being forced under that system. And so that is one of the documents that you have to factor into the foundation of the dark side of U.S. federal Indian law and U.S. law and so forth. And when you look at the overall system and you wonder, why is there such a tremendous number of these horrific situations, whether there be massacres or forced marches and dispossessions and so forth, is because it's a direct consequence of that overall system.
Well, another consequence of that system has been the policy of our government for more than 200 years to essentially remove the native cultures, to displace people from not just their land, but from their culture, and the schools, the Christian, the missionary schools. Talk a little bit more about how that culture has been all but eradicated.
Well, one of the policies of the United States government was summed up very succinctly by Colonel Pratt in stating, kill the Indian, save the man, which is a genocidal agenda to take apart at the seams the existence of Native nations and to steal the children, rip them away from their families, such as has been done recently by the Trump administration to some of the folks at the border. It's been widely publicized in the news, of course. And but to take the children and put them into institutions where they are not allowed to speak their own traditional language or to engage in ceremony or to engage in their child rites of passage into adulthood, all those types of things, it's the idea that that is to be stamped out and the spiritual traditions are to be abandoned. And the whole agenda is to sever the people, to uproot them from the land, because that's, after all, what the United States was after, and it's all about the resources, right? So life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, I always word that as life, liberty, and the pursuit of Indian land. And and so that because that's really what it was all about. That was the form of happiness they were after.
Now, in order to really uncover and unwrap and unwind this doctrine of discovery, required a certain level of scholarship in delving into Latin and so on. Could you talk a little bit more about the subtle distinctions in the Latin that pretty much spell this out, the policy out?
Right. Well, there's a difference in the way that certain English translations are written down and the meanings in the Latin terminology. So, if, for example, in one of the papal bulls, it talks about bringing the native people to Christianity, but in the Latin, the term is reduce them to Christianity, or to the Christian religion, the Catholic faith and Christian religion. That it was to be everywhere increased and spread, and that barbarous nations be reduced or subjugated and brought to the faith itself. Well, it's actually reduced and reduced, but there is a way in which translators, whether consciously or unconsciously, are creating euphemistic translations of those documents. So it makes it look like they're fairly benign. And, however, there's an amazing sentence in Latin in the papal bull of May 3rd, 1493, which states, sub actuali dominio temporali aliquorum dominorum Christianorum constitute non essent, which means lands not constituted under the domination of any Christian dominators, plural. And so that tells you very clearly that it is a system of domination. And what's interesting is that the word domination is so seldom used in most of the scholarship, or many of the scholars also take the word Christian and change it to the word European, so that you are then in a secular, non-religious framework, a geographical framework of a place called Europe, and the people from there called Europeans. So there are many subtleties, as you mentioned, and of course all this is contrasted with the traditional teachings and values, such as Virgil Kilstraight and other elders will tell you about, which are predicated on a whole set of very positive values. And so ways in which we're trying to revitalize and restore those traditions of thought and language and ceremony and all that, and figure out how to work with life beneficially rather than destructively, that is a very important part of the traditional wisdom teachings that we're attempting to bring forward at this time.
Well, we're going to hear a little bit more about that in the reference code. When we get back from our break, we're talking with Stephen Newcomb and his daughter, Shauna Bluestar. We'll be back after this message.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America, you know, your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Steve Behrman back, WikiPoliticky, and we're talking with Stephen Newcomb, who is a scholar and a discoverer of the doctrine of discovery. And we're talking with Shauna Bluestar, his daughter. And before we get to Shauna, I want to ask Steve one more thing, because I think that's going to lead to this reverence code we're talking about. And that is, give me a sense of this, of the kinds of cultural ideas and beliefs that were displaced by the dominators when they arrived at the shore. The civilization, we don't hear much about the civilization that existed beforehand. What were the values and principles of the native civilization prior to their unfortunate discovery?
Well, I use a spiritual way of life to talk about the traditional cultures and societies that were here prior to the colonization. Civilization in one context is defined as the forcing of a particular cultural pattern on a population to which it is foreign. So that's an interesting take on that term. But the point you're driving at, I think, is that there were here many, many nations, hundreds of nations that had evolved over thousands and thousands of years, their own unique languages, cultures, and spiritual traditions, and their ways of maintaining their ecological the ecological systems within their traditional territories. So to maintain those systems in perpetuity, meaning for all the future generations, and the oral histories and traditions taught how to carry on in that manner. So we had our own child rearing practices and our own, as I had mentioned earlier, rites of passage and ways in which the people were held together cohesively based upon codes of conduct, based upon what Virgil Kilstrate has mentioned in their tradition, the Oglala Lakota tradition of the seven laws. So compassion and pity, sharing and caring to carry the well-being or welfare of the people in your heart, to have patience and fortitude, bravery and courage, and humbleness and humility, seeking wisdom and seeking understanding. Those are seven that he has mentioned. And those are tied to the rituals, the seven sacred rituals, and to sacred places, and the prayerful interaction with life. It's very difficult for people in this day and age and within the context that people live currently with all the technology and so forth to truly appreciate the depth of and profound degree of spirituality that our societies had and the way in which they were oriented toward prayer and a prayerful relationship with all forms of life. But that's really what it was about. And I think one of the tragedies is that because our societies had much to provide the world with in terms of these traditional teachings, it's a shame that so much was destroyed before that kind of information could be imparted. And so we do still have pockets of that information, and so that's what we're working with, traditional elders and other knowledge carriers that understand those ways.
Well, that's a good lead-in to bringing Shauna on. Because Shauna, you're really your focus is really more about the as the past is revealed and healed. This is more about designing a future that looks a lot more like the balance and harmony with nature that you call the reverence code. Shauna, welcome, and tell us a little bit about how your work has evolved.
Hi, thank you, Steve. It's great to be here. Yeah, I do see that it's been really wonderful to come into this collaboration with my father and all of the incredible research and work that he's done over, for 40 years and bringing that to a place where people can understand and see what was very much hidden, I think, for quite a long time. I actually remember a kind of a funny story where in eighth grade, I was a pretty good student, but I got a zero on a paper that I worked very hard on, and I was devastated. How could I get a zero on this history paper where I was, sharing the history that my dad had taught me and all of this research that he'd done about the Doctrine of Discovery and the things that happened. And the teacher was saying that I was making all of this up, and none of this was in the history books. So I found that kind of ironic. So I told my dad, and he said, well, he would, go with me to the teacher and present the books and the research and the data to support what I had written. And so we really had an opportunity to enlighten the history teacher. My dad also noticed, though, at the time, because this was back in the 80s, that she actually still had a poster on her wall that referred to Indigenous people as savages, which is, it's hard to imagine that in some places today, people have evolved to understand that that's a very derogatory and inhumane terminology, but it's interesting that she was a history teacher that still had that. So that's kind of my wake-up call when I started to begin I see the world in a different way, and not everybody understands this history. But I was also really fortunate to have incredible teachers growing up. My dad, of course, has been really wonderful. My mom has been a nurturing person, and I grew up in a community with elders, Indigenous culture and spirituality, going to ceremonies and seeing that as a way of life and a way of being. And then as my own journey progressed, I began to have a lot of spiritual experiences at a very young age that I didn't quite understand. But that began my exploration in understanding in many ways, like this reverence code piece that I'm speaking to is, yes, based on the Indigenous teachings and spirituality, but it's my own process and learning and discovering for myself what that's really about. And I see that can be the same for other people to really investigate and see that so many people are feeling this imbalance. We're seeing diseases and inflammation in the bodies and anxiety and depression and relationships suffering. There's so many levels. Or young people, my dad spoke about the rites of passage, where young people are feeling lost or something's wrong with them. All of these limiting beliefs that people carry. I like to look at what my dad has presented with this domination code and really revealing what that's about, looking at that on a practical level and seeing that this isn't something that's just in the history that happened a long time ago. This is very current, and yes, it's in the laws and the legal system, and that's eye-opening in itself. And it's also eye-opening to look at it on a practical level. How is this domination code in all of the ways that it has affected life and all people's connection to nature? And what is that doing to all aspects of our lives and ourselves on a scale of well-being, if you will, the mind, the body, the heart, the spirit, purpose, relationships, our abundance, and our impact on how we are living in the world and how we're being to one another. Those are things that I shine a light on as well and say, let's look at this domination code because it affects all of us and we're all in this together. And how can we begin to heal it by seeing this spiritual connection in a deeper way?
It's a really, really, really good point that, as I began to hear more about this and see more about it, I recognized that domination and extraction is so invisible to our culture. We don't realize that we use dominator metaphors all the time. We think that way. We think through this kind of thing so that everybody, in this culture, if you're a white person, you get to feel a little better about yourself. You've been taught to feel better about yourself because you're white. You're better than those other people. And now all of these, some people say the chickens are coming home to roost. I prefer saying the dinosaurs are coming home to roost. And we're having this up in our face right now. So you, Shauna, you're really right in the middle of this because you're a bridge in generations, and you're also a bridge between the inner life and the outer life. So say a little bit more about the kinds of inner knowings and downloads that you've received and how this has impacted your life and your work with other people.
Okay. I feel like it's very much, you know, this is a really big time right now when you're saying that this is all coming. I look at it as what has been hidden in the shadows is now suddenly coming into the light, and everyone is, you know, having their reactions about it and triggers because it's very ugly and it's not something that's pleasant to look at. And yet I see that it's also a time of immense personal responsibility, that this isn't a time to shut off the TV yes, we want to be mindful about what we're seeing and how it's presented to us, but listening and understanding what's really going on in the world, not just living in a bubble of, oh, I don't want to focus on this. Sure, we don't want to focus on negativity, and yet it's also important to say, how is this all coming to the surface so that it can be looked at, so that it can be healed and understood? And how can we come to deeper understanding of each other's backgrounds and each other's histories? And what is the true history that has been, you know, there's been a history that has been presented, for instance, in the history books that maybe was from a different perspective. If you look at it from an indigenous people's perspective, that's going to give a whole different new understanding. And so that, you know, I've received many messages and I would say, I guess, visions, if you will, about what, you know, for me, it's been the planet. I feel a lot of empathy, compassion for people, for all beings and all people and all, you know, animals and the earth. And I would say a message about the great shift is one of the big things that happened to me, where I was kind of receiving this big message about this evolution that's happening right now. And as I've been speaking and sharing, and I have been sharing that message with other people, I've been seeing the opportunity that many people are receiving these types of dreams or messages or visions, and yet they're afraid to talk about it with each other. And as I'm sharing, people are saying, you know what, I've also been getting this, or I got this message, or I had this experience, this deep spiritual experience, but I don't really talk about it with anybody. And this is all part of the domination code, where, you know, people have been in this context of, oh, that's all, you know, backwards, or, oh, you know, we don't talk about that, or that's evil or wrong, or there's a lot of that kind of upside down thinking. For instance, one thing that I like, my dad talks about the language a lot, is that sacred places that have been meaningful to indigenous peoples at one time, or still are, but maybe it's not known by many people, it's, you know, Devil's Cove or Devil's Canyon, that's most likely a sacred place. And, you know, it's interesting that that would then become the name that it is put upon it. Just because it's not understood in honoring it in that way.
It is interesting how
this. I just look at it as a very big time of awakening right now. A lot of big shifts and changes, and a lot of opportunity for us to move forward together.
What do you see as the greatest? You know, in a time when there's a lot of discouragement, caterpillar debris falling everywhere. What to you are the most encouraging signs that we can and will evolve our way through this?
Well, I think it's interesting how something that's you know, if we look at things and we say, oh, it's so bad, and look at this and look at that and these terrible things that are happening, I also see on a spiritual level, which I've found very amazing, is how many times people are coming together. You know, when we see a hurricane or a flood or fires, and yet communities are coming together at this time, or we're seeing these things you know, happening, but it's opening people's hearts and minds to come into a deeper place of unity and understanding and compassion. And some people have not felt that compassion to that level before. And it awakens in that way, almost through a place of pain for some people. And yet this is a time to really feel into that compassion and see our humanity and recognize that we're coming back to that humanity and having a sense of connection with all people in a completely new way. That's what I see, is many people coming together that may not have come together before, and the opportunity to do that. And then I also went to the an Oregon Eclipse Festival last year. It was 50,000 people from 50 countries, and seeing the excitement and the energy around consciousness and coming together in community, and very amazing to see young people carrying that. And I think that's a good sign of really good things happening and more people coming together, co-creating a vision of what we want to see in the future and how we can start to move forward with that is a really powerful shift. And this is part of that great shift that we're seeing.
You know, talking about all this, this really has to do with the lifting of the veils, which the apocalypse means lifting the veils. And we're seeing the veils, you know, as your dad, he's lifting the veils on how many of these things got instituted. And your work, in a way, is lifting the veils on the opportunity that we have to heal and to bring forth something different, something that's more reverent. And people coming together in community, because I think that the community and consciousness are the two things that will help us evolve into a more conscious, loving planet. So when we come back after this next break, we're going to really talk more about how we let more people know about this, and then what does it mean to actually make this change and redress the grievance. Steve Behrman, I'm Wiki Politiki. We'll be back with Steve Newcomb and Shauna Blue Star.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network. Presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
We're back with Steve Newcomb and Shauna Blue Star. We're talking about the domination code and the reverence code. Something that's in the news today, it's surprising, it's shocking, but not surprising. More than 300 Catholic priests abused thousands of victims for 70 years in Pennsylvania with protection from church leadership, according to a grand jury report out today. So apparently it's an equal opportunity dominator. It doesn't matter what your color is. But I don't mean to be glib about this. I'm just saying that when you issue a license for domination, it really dehumanizes everyone and everything around you. So in this last segment, and we're coming quickly to the end of a very interesting hour, Stephen and Sean, let's start with Stephen. How, as you've sought to proliferate this, and I saw that there's a photo of you and Pope Francis, you meeting Pope Francis at the Vatican, as you've sought to redress this and educate, what's been the response?
Well, the response to an extent has been providing the appearance of wanting to engage with the information on the part of the Holy See or the Vatican, but at the same time sidestepping it in a very clever and deft, skilled manner. And the reason I say that is because the horrific nature of the language in those documents, which cannot be overemphasized, is something that the Vatican has never acknowledged publicly. In other words, when Pope Francis and other popes have made some kind of contrite statement about the past and colonization, they didn't say, my predecessor, Pope Alexander VI, issued a papal bull in which it was stated that the barbarous nation should be reduced or dominated, and I'm apologizing for that. It's left very, very vague and innocuous. So it's not specified. And I think that's important, is to get into the specifics of the way in which the mental categories and the language system that's being used in an institutionalized manner by the courts and by the U.S. Legal and political powers that want to be are used against Native nations and peoples, and therefore locking people into a lot of very destructive patterns. But as Shauna has said so eloquently, it's really a matter of us all being in this together. And this is something that's global in scope. It's not just about indigenous nations, but it's really about all forms of life and looking at the dire situation that ecological systems and waterways face everywhere, the decimation of the forests and the destruction of the different life forms that are moving toward extinction. All of that is a direct consequence, as you had put it earlier, domination and extraction. So how do we move out of that? How do we work through community and consciousness to communicate just the skill of communication without bigotry and without hatred and so forth? How do we actually make that transition, and what does that look like? What are the models of success that we can point to?
That's a great question. Let's jump in. Sean, if you have any ideas about how do we grow into this sense of reverence, once there's a realization and an acknowledgement, there has to be an acknowledgement before there could be any reconciliation or forgiveness or anything like that. There needs to be an acknowledgement that this happened. How can we grow into the reverence code? What do you see happening over the next 10, 20, or 30 years?
One thing that I think is very apparent, and it's happening almost just without people being conscious of it or not. I mean, there are people that are conscious, but we're seeing the rise of the divine feminine, the sacred feminine, and that has been something that is from long, long ago, before we saw the domination code being introduced. I mean, I do go back into the deeper history that goes before, this quote, discovery of the Americas or Turtle Island, is that at one time there were, indigenous cultures in Europe, and what did that look like? And there's incredible wisdom and incredible leadership and healing that was done by women at those times. And then we look at, there's the Inquisition and the burning of witches, and that is really the oppression and the suppression of women's voices. And the more that we're seeing things change and come into a new direction, we're suddenly seeing women's voices being heard. We're seeing, you know, that suddenly abuse is not tolerated as it once was. We're seeing harassment is not tolerated as it once was. So this honoring of the feminine, not only there's a feminine and a masculine in all people, not just men, not just women being in that gender, it's this energy and having this understanding as well, like let's have a respect for people's voices, have a respect for an acceptance of different cultures and understanding that this women's empowerment, if you will, this leadership is actually bringing a lot of healing and a lot of a new energy that has been suppressed for a very long time. And we see that in our indigenous cultures. We're seeing grandmothers, you know, the grandmothers are the ones that we go to and we listen to the grandmothers. The men listen to the grandmothers and they honor their wisdom. And so that's one really big piece. And then honoring the compassion, you know, compassion and understanding, coming to a new place of being very heart-centered when in the past, or, you know, it's very much a culture that we know is based on logic and structure. And yes, those are all great things. And I look at it also, it's not just about only like women being empowered and like suddenly men lose power. It's not in that way. I think that's kind of this domination code skews a lot of that. It's about a place of unifying this, what it would be called the divine masculine, divine feminine, so that we can start to come together in this really balanced place that we've seen a very long time ago and we're coming back to now. I see that very much.
You know, I really appreciate you bringing in the indigenous people of Europe, because prior to Christianity, and even after Christianity, there were, you know, groups like the Gnostics and so on, that were looking, the Essenes in biblical times, were looking to live a life that was in harmony with the web of life. And as many people know, and some people might not know, that the matriarchal societies were not women dominated. They were egalitarian societies where the feminine influence prevented bullying and prevented domination, so that men were liberated as well. They didn't, you know, it was, it's now very confusing for both men and women. And you know, maybe we need to have a We Too movement, because all of us have been impacted by the dominator, whether we know it or not. It's in our economic system. It's in our educational system. It's in our system of hierarchies of who we think is more important than other people. So we clearly have our work cut out for us. Stephen, how do you see your work unfolding in the next number of years? What are your intentions in bringing this out?
Well, I think because the movie is gaining some traction, our documentary movie, The Doctrine of Discovery, Unmasking the Domination Code, it's gaining some traction and being seen more often by more people, that it is assisting folks to more deeply understand what this message is all about, and it gives us opportunities to visit with more folks. And the momentum, as it gains traction, I would expect that will continue to accelerate and provide the opportunity to have these kinds of conversations and make it something that's more ordinary and normal. One of the things that was interesting to me at the Eclipse Gathering in Oregon was a circle that one of the elders, indigenous elders, had asked Shauna to co-present with him. And she asked the circle of people how many of them had some kind of a quote-unquote supernatural experience, such as a message or some kind of what would typically be called a quote-unquote supernatural type of experience, vision or what have you. And the vast majority of the people in the circle raised their hand. And then she said, well, how many of you have ever shared that with anyone? And almost no one raised their hand. So the ways in which the suppression, the system of suppression, has made people believe that they're crazy if they get some of these insights and so forth, when it's just an ordinary part of our intuitive aspect of our being. That's a big part of the problem as well, and thinking that you're weak if you're a guy, if you have emotions, and you got to be the, you know, the tough male, right? All that sort of thing. And coming out of the ego and into the eagle, you know, that's an interesting way to put it as well. And so, you know, it'll continue to move along, and hopefully we'll get better at promoting the message and get better at expressing it. And the last thing I want to say is that one of the most fascinating aspects of my research is a doctrine called nullus, which is a Latin term basically meaning null and void or not existing. And what is done with the language system is to make it seem as if our nations and peoples as infidel nations do not exist. And then within that opening of a mentally created form of disappearance, that they plant their own dominium, meaning a right of property or a right of domination in that place, and then we are just completely pushed aside, and that's got to shift, that's got to change before we can talk about anything regarding reconciliation. If you got me in a cage and you want to talk to me about reconciliation, let me out of the cage and we can talk about it. So that's something I wanted to add to the mix.
You know, it's interesting that in these times over the past 20 years, something that's been quote unquote given to the Native American communities are casinos. You know, and more and more and more, we live in a casino economy where there's a lot, where there's a few really, really big winners and lots and lots and lots of losers. So here we have the contrast where. You know, this is how Native American communities can have been financially thriving in some ways. Can you say something about the casinos and the tribes and how your discoveries have been received inside the Native communities?
Well, it varies, and it's gaining traction in many places. It's maybe not seen as so important in other places, but you know, the gambling in terms of casinos and that sort of thing was for a very, very long time from the dominant society point of view looked upon as a vice. So it's an economy of vice. It would be one way of looking at it. On the other hand, because people love to go to casinos and spend money there, and they get a sense of satisfaction of that, and it fits into the idea of the love of riches and wealth and the dream of you know, winning the jackpot, it has been very successful for many nations, and it has provided them with an economic base that they would not otherwise have, and that they certainly don't gain from any kind of relationship with the United States government. So that, in that sense, it's been good, but you have to go to each and every one of them and talk to them specifically about whether they view it as a good thing or bad thing. And I think part of it is also about how nations decide to spend those monies and where they put them, whether they're putting them into revitalizing their languages and cultures and spiritual traditions, all that sort of thing, or are they putting it elsewhere? And those are, you know, they have the right to make their own decisions. That's called self-determination. So it has good and bad aspects, I suppose. It's the positives and the negatives. But it's not the casinos themselves. It's the ways in which we have been so damaged. We as indigenous peoples have been so damaged by the boarding schools and by the assimilation agenda of the United States that has resulted in a lot of, you know, a lot of behavior that really needs to be healed. And so we're all working on that in our own various ways, and the intergenerational trauma label that speaks to some of that. But yeah, so I think it's a very big conversation, but that's a kind of a concise assessment of it from my viewpoint.
You know, as it comes to the end of our time together, Sean, I want you to have the last word. I want you to, tell a vision. Tell a vision, lay out your vision for how this reverence code can roll out, be adopted, and how you see your work continuing over the next period of time.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. So I do have a very big vision because I have, you know, a lot of compassion for all people, and I would love to invite anybody that would like to explore the domination code and healing all the imbalances that are associated with that, looking at the deeper history and understanding what that's really about, and then really coming into this place of the reverence code and this deeper spiritual understanding and self-love, self-acceptance, acceptance for others, this interconnection with others, this connection with the earth and all peoples. I think it's very important that we have conversations and healing. So I'm creating a course that, where I'd like to invite people to come to a course that we're working on. If people have interest in that, they can go to my website. It's www.shawnablustar.com. And I also do healing or coaching sessions with people to explore that type of work as well. And my originalfreenations.com.
originalfreenations.com. Thank you so much, Shawna. Thank you so much, Stephen. I look forward to future conversations. This is Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki. Talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Bye now.